Thanks for listening to the Best of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weeknight from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern, 7 to 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every night on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon on Fox Sports Radio.
Pete Futek is the man. He joins us right now on Fox Sports Radio with Rich Ohrenberger. I'm Chris Plank, sitting in for Jason and Mike. CollegeFootballNews.com. That's where Pete hangs out covering the college football beat. All right, so Pete, we spent last segment talking a little bit about this smoke today on Lincoln to LSU, what looks like maybe some Matt Campbell to USC talk. If Pete Futek is offered the LSU, USC, and Florida jobs, which one do you look at and say, I'm taking that job because that's where I can be the most successful right now?
Is it about being most successful, or is it the job where I want to live in Los Angeles because it's nice and warm there? Here's the thing. I don't know why. Why would Lincoln Riley take the LSU job? And it's not about money at this point because all these guys are getting paid gajillions of dollars. Why wouldn't he take the next NFL job? Why isn't he Cliff Kingsbury already? First of all, any rumor you just said is not coming from anybody other than an agent.
Speak.
Because what happens is that these guys, and I'm not joking, that every time any of these guys write something like the five coaching candidates for X, all of a sudden that just throws more money on the pile. There's no reason to hire these guys for these millions of years. I mean, it's bad paper at the end. So in the end, to answer your question, why do you want to go to LSU and beat your head against that wall and go? Because 10-2 is not good enough. Last year at this exact time, Florida was, I believe, 27-6 under Dan Mullen with two top seven finishes, and they were in the college football playoff hunt. And then next weekend, I think at this time, they lost to LSU in that weird game. Then the epic SEC championship, and everyone leaves. They lose the bowl game, and now he can't coach anymore. So it's why do you, outside of the $10 million a year you get, why would you want this job if you have your choice?
Can I ask you a question? Is there a candidate out there that can revive the Trojans program? Because we were talking a little bit, and it's sort of like we still see Trojans fans wax poetic about Pete Carroll because there really hasn't been any consistency since. Is there a coaching candidate out there who can turn around the fortunes of SC?
I actually am under the belief that pretty much there are lots of them. Because think about what happened. Is that you had the Pete Carroll era, and this is still – now, all the things that USC got hammered for and got put in the coma penalty for are now cool. Oh, my gosh, Reggie Bush got in – he talked to a marketing agency. Oh, no. He had an agent looking on his behalf for future endeavors. That's all kosher now. It's all good. All that stuff that almost got them the death penalty and all the things that killed them are now all right. So you went from the Pete Carroll era to Lane Kiffin, I think I have this timeline right, who was actually great. He had the one really great year, and then they got hit with the Reggie Bush sanctions, and they weren't quite as good. And they got rid of him because he was Lane Kiffin, and he annoyed them. And then Ed Orgeron for a little while. And then they went the opposite of Lane. And then you go Steve Sarkisian, and he had all his issues. And then you go to Clay Helton, who was only there as long as he was because he's a really good guy, and everyone liked him. So it's like they've gone to all these different extremes, but yet who's the guy who actually won there? It's Kiffin. He's it. He's the coach. If you could just do that again and just say, Lane Kiffin, come back to USC, there's your guy who wins Pac-12 and championships and, SC and big-time, college football playoff stuff. But there's a lot of coaches out there. Because it recruits easily, the Pac-12 is winnable. That's the job over SEC and Florida and LSU. Because you go to those jobs and you're beating your head against that Nick Saban Alabama wall every single year. You go to USC. What do? You have to fight Utah? Really? You're fine. Take the USC job.
Love it. I love it. Pete, so Cincinnati takes care of East Carolina today, 35-19, pretty convincing fashion. I mean, again, I know the blocked field goal helped make it a little bit more problematic for those who may have taken East Carolina in the 14 points.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about that.
I'm so angry right now. It's not even funny.
But
with that in mind, a win against Houston and they're in, they're going to the playoffs, right?
I'm going to talk about your neck of the woods. Here's the thing I don't think anybody's factoring in. The self-fulfillingness of the college football playoff rankings. Technically, right now, who has the toughest schedule remaining? It is the Big 12 champion. Because to win the Big 12 championship, you're going to have to be a top 10 ranked team and then another top 10 ranked team, at least at the moment. So what's not factored into the rankings or into the equation at the moment is if Oklahoma or Oklahoma State go 12-1, that means Oklahoma would have to beat Oklahoma State twice, or Oklahoma State would have to beat Oklahoma and then maybe probably Baylor for the Big 12 championship. So right now, look, until there's something else that changes in the mix, as long as there's been a college football playoff, if you go 12-1 and win your Power 5 conference championship, other than Ohio State a few years back when they got annihilated by Purdue and you had to put in Notre Dame, everyone else has gotten in. 12-1 gets you, a Power 5 champ gets you in, especially this year when there's only going to be a few of them. So I actually kind of think that a 12-1 Big 12 champion is the next team up, besides SEC champion, 12-1 Big Ten champion, 12-1 Big 12 champion. And then let's see what happens. If Alabama beats Georgia, then all bets are off, and then who knows with Cincinnati. And I actually think the argument we're probably going to have, if there is one, is more going to be two-loss Alabama, who plays Georgia tough, when we all know that it is actually one of the four best teams in college football, versus a Cincinnati team that has one win and nothing else. And so that's going to be the interesting argument. I think Cincinnati gets in, just because I think that's – this year, if you're going to have to argue over the fourth spot, okay, give them a shot. I thought that they were in trouble today against East Carolina. I thought that was a super dangerous game. And it, like you said, before the blocked field goal, it looked like they were one penalty away from being right in it. And Houston is certainly going to be a dangerous game next week.
I'm going to ask you a question that very few people have considered, but I'm curious to hear how you answer this. What if Cincinnati wins a national championship?
There's two. Well, okay, great. You know, cool. the only problem with that is it's like, okay, but you got there in the first place by catching a monster break. Now, to be fair, Alabama has caught that break before when it won the national championship a few years back when it didn't even win its own division. So they didn't have to play a conference championship game, and they still got the benefit of a doubt. But in this case, my issue is, okay, but look at, you know, it's not quite fair that in a weekend where, look, Michigan's playing Ohio State and vice versa, Oklahoma and Oklahoma State are playing each other. You know, you have all these big monster games, and Cincinnati's beating East Carolina. Like, you're running a race, and one runner only has one big mountain to get over, and these other runners have, like, eight that they've got to run over. So it's kind of not fair when the idea of, oh, look at Cincinnati, they're playing great now, they're fresh. Like, yeah, because they don't accumulate the body blows that, like, okay, you beat Notre Dame. Now, you know, do what Alabama's doing and beat LSU and beat Florida and beat Texas A&M, which they didn't, and beat Ole Miss and Mississippi State, or, you know, same thing for the Big Ten, even the Big 12 to a certain extent, you know, getting through Iowa State, getting through Oklahoma State, getting through Baylor, all that. It's just not the same, because there's just not the same talent level like there is in the American Athletic Conference.
Hey, Pete, last one. We'll let you get out of here. You giving Michigan a chance against Ohio State at all tomorrow?
Yeah, I would. What we haven't factored in yet is they haven't played anybody who can run in a long, long time. And it's kind of been conveniently forgotten just how historically for Ohio State bad, it's all on a sliding scale, of course, that the Ohio State defense was to start the season, because if you count in the Alabama loss, that they were on a three-game run. They had never in the history of Ohio State given up more points over three games than they did in Alabama, Minnesota, and Oregon. And during those first two games, they got run over by Mo Ibrahim before he blew out his Achilles. And then, obviously, Oregon ran well. And they didn't really play anybody else who could run. You know, they didn't play Wisconsin. They didn't play any of these, you know, battering ram teams. And then Michigan State, the one team that had Kenneth Walker and could run, they were getting boat raced by, you know, 95-2 or 95-0 getting off the bus. So, like, they couldn't run the ball. So now you get a team that can actually pound a little bit. So I do give them a little bit of a chance. I'm still going Alabama, or not Alabama, really, Ohio State, and give them up the 8, fine. But I don't think it's going to quite be the annihilation that we assume it's going to be when it comes to Michigan and Ohio State.
Pete, always enjoy your perspective, man. Go check him out on Twitter at Pete Futek. CollegeFootballNews.com. We'll talk to you again soon, man. Have a great game day.
Anytime, guys. Have a good one.
Love that dude. Pete Futek, CollegeFootballNews.com. All right. By the way, John Morant did put a post out on Twitter a couple minutes ago, and basically said, it's in God's hands now. All we can do is pray. So we'll keep an eye on the John Morant injury. Did I read this correctly? And I got to be honest with you. I am definitely I start paying attention at Christmas NBA fan. We were joking. I was on with Brian Noe last night, and he had to remind me that the Suns are on their current winning streak. I live in a market with an NBA team, and I barely have paid. So I sound like I'm bragging. Oh, take that NBA. I love the NBA. It's football season, Rich. So I'm all in. But did I read that this fine that I heard about LeBron getting for this was the term. Jones made a gesture after making a shot late in the Lakers' win over Indiana on Wednesday night. He has also been warned by the league about using profane language. Did he really do the Sam Cassell Huevos dance? And is that now something that we frown upon in the league? Is that really what happened there?
I mean, if you search LeBron James fine, I'm sure you'll see the video pop up. He's kind of running away from that deep three he took against the Pacers. And, you know, he's grabbing a hold and he's taking it for a ride as he's galloping across midcourt. And so it was a wrist slap for a fine. We're talking about 15 grand to a man who makes 500,000 a game. So, I mean, come on. We're not talking about a lot of money. And then also a warning. A warning about his language at post-game press is just essentially saying, please, LeBron, could you just not? And he, you know, he gets off the phone with Adam Silver, the commish, and he goes, all right, well, just get my car washed and I'll think about it.
So, and by the way, Isaiah Stewart v. LeBron James round 2 coming up on the NBA schedule. All right, there's my NBA hot takes for tonight here on Fox Sports Radio. You're welcome. Thank you. I'm all in. As you can tell, I'm all in. But if you listen on Christmas and I'm filling in, I'll talk about the NBA like I've been watching it all season long. Like it's the greatest thing I've ever seen. I can't get all in, though, because I do love college football. And we're going to talk a lot about the games on Saturday coming up here in a bit. But I don't feel like I've done a good job recapping the games with you, Rich, from yesterday in the National Football League. And the big topic du jour today and what's kind of I've consumed a lot in listening to Fox Sports Radio is concern over the Cowboys. Now, I get it. Everyone realized the Raiders are the new power in the universe. So it's kind of hard not to get, you know, more in love with what the Raiders did and less concerned with what the Cowboys did. That's complete sarcasm. But is there cause for concern right now, Rich, with the Cowboys? Or do we just chalk it up to injuries and kind of hitting maybe a little bit of a wall when they've got a very comfortable lead right now?
No, I don't think there's major concern that they're going to lose that division. I think they're far and away the best team in the NFC East. I mean, when you think about the Washington football team and you think about the New York Giants, they certainly are not worthy adversaries at this point. Philadelphia Eagles are giving you a lot more to think about, though. You know, Jalen Hurts, what they've been able to do recently, I'm sure that gives Dallas pause, and it should, because they play each other the last game of the season, and that becomes more and more interesting the worse the Cowboys play. They've played 4. They've lost 3 of those 4 recently. And I mentioned it earlier with Jason, our guest. It really comes down to this. Over the games that they've lost, their run game has been paltry. You know, the loss to the Broncos, under 80 yards rushing total on the night. Game prior to that was survival in Minnesota, and again, under 80 yards on the ground in that game. You know, so 82 yards against the Chiefs, 64 yards with overtime. You know, so you even get the extra period, and they can't even crest 70 yards on the ground. You got Zeke Elliott and Tony Pollard. Now, Zeke may not play next week because he's riding a knee injury here, and they got three straight appointments on the road, going to the Saints, then the football team in Washington, followed by the Giants. But if they don't get this run game fixed, and they don't balance things out offensively, and they keep relying on Dak to win them every football game, that, to me, is an equation to continue to see the outcomes that we've seen in these recent matchups with the Cowboys.
They just haven't had a consistent running game. And I loved how you put it with Dak. You know, are they putting too much on him? And yeah, Jason's answer was dead on, right? I feel like a lot of NFL teams put a lot on their quarterback. But I know the numbers aren't always going to wow everyone, but Playoff Lenny became a thing for the Buccaneers last year because they won football games when Leonard Fournette was running the football well. Buffalo was running the football well last year in their playoff run, their defense. Tennessee, go back the last couple of seasons. I know they got knocked out in the first round last year, but when they went to the AFC Championship game, the Cowboys' inconsistency whenever it comes to their running game, with as much as they've invested in it, right? With injuries on their offensive line with Smith and the money they've put into Zeke, it's got to get better, Rich, and they've got to be able to rely on it. Pollard looks good. He's got some juice, but it just hasn't been there for him the last few weeks.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Look, here's the deal. In games where they've attempted 30 rushes or more, they've won. In games where they've attempted 20 rushes or less, they've lost. That's it. I mean, that's what it comes down to. They've won every game that they've had 30 rushing attempts or more. They've lost every game where they've had 20 rushing attempts or less. And look, I mean, that's a symptom in football in general. You know, when you have a lead at the end of the game, you lean on your run game to milk the clock, and I understand that. But if you watch these games, those early down runs that are supposed to keep you on schedule is the way we talk about it in football. It keeps you on schedule. You get, you know, a 4-yard first down rush, sets you up for a 2nd and 6, and your whole playbook is open. Well, if you get a no gain, if you get a tackle for loss on first down, it puts you behind the chains, and then it makes converting third downs, keeping your offense on the field, more difficult. It puts a lot more dependence on your quarterback. It strains your offensive coordinator because he's using more of his passing game earlier in the game than you want to. He's getting to plays that you may have reserved for later in the game for situations that may come up, right, and you're using them in the first and second quarters. So that's a big problem for the Cowboys. They got
to
fix it.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.
All right, a lot of NFL to talk about here on Fox Sports Radio. No one better to do it with than Rich Ohrenberger. I'm Chris Plank, in for Jason and Mike on Fox Sports Radio. This college basketball game, though, is pretty bananas right now. 4:05 to go. Duke leads Gonzaga 75-73. I don't think anyone's sitting down right now. This has been a fun game to watch as Gonzaga looks to tie it up. And, oh, they missed a bunny. So 75-73. Duke leads. I want to talk real quick while we follow this, some NFL, Rich, and not necessarily looking ahead, but looking back real quick. You know, the Cowboys upset with the officiating, but Jerry Jones said something that ended up being just dead on, you know what, accurate. And he said he thought it was going to be the highest rated game that the NFL had seen in a long time. Well, according to what CBS Sports PR threw out today, the NFL and CBS, Las Vegas, Dallas, the Thanksgiving Day game, delivered an estimated audience, Rich, of 38.5 million viewers. Million. It's the most watched regular season game on any network since 1991. It's up 26% from last year's game window. And it was the most streamed NFL regular season game ever. By the way, I was streaming it, and Paramount Plus, by, awesome, right? Congratulations that you have a streaming service. My stream was a good 25 minutes behind the game.
Oh, wow. Not,
it was in rain. Twitter would have something. I'm like, wait, what? So I literally just had to finally watch it on my phone. But that's big time, right?
Oh, yeah.
And Andrew Marchand, who covers the media beat for the New York Post, he tweeted a note that Andrew Brandt threw out, and I threw it to you guys pre-show. The NFL just re-upped with Fox, ESPN, NBC, CBS, and Amazon for $110 billion over 12 years. And based on some of the numbers you're seeing, Andrew Brandt added, they may end up looking like good deals for the networks. Andrew Marchand, I mentioned him because he retweeted it into my timeline, and he said the NFL can actually opt out after 7 years.
Yes.
Now, again, I know that's looking kind of far down the line. You never know what could happen, but do you see anything slowing down this NFL popularity train?
No, I don't. And you know what's crazy about that number? You know, damn near 35 million people.
Crazy.
Watching this game. I mean, if you compare that to the number, and I'm talking about the cumulative number of people who watched the NBA Finals between the Bucks and the Suns. I mean, it's close. I mean, they get lapped if you take all six games. But you're talking about, you know, cumulatively over six games, 60 million people tuning in. Over six games, six separate games. You got there halfway there in one game, one regular season game, by the way, to a team that was on a three-game losing streak and a Cowboys team that's been roughed up lately. So, I mean, it's just unbelievable the media juggernaut that the NFL has created. Oh, by the way, the game six where the Braves won their first World Series since the 90s, only 14.3 million people tuned in for that one. So the World Series, the determining game of the World Series this past World Series was lapped by Raiders Dallas on Thanksgiving Day. It's just a juggernaut. I mean, they're printing money in the NFL. At this point, it's the golden goose. There's never been a television product this strong in the history of television, and it just keeps marching forward year after year after year. They've got the best gambling component alongside it, and it's only going to get stronger. You're going to see apps once sports betting is legalized in every state that there's an NFL team. You're going to start seeing these apps churning out in-game props at an alarming rate. The best fantasy football component, where literally I'm in a league with buddies, and then also my mom. And also our 60-year-old neighbor who's a woman. Yeah, I mean, like, it doesn't matter, old or young, woman or man. Everybody's invited under the tent that is the NFL now. They've created this circus that everybody wants to see.
I love it. I love it. And, you know, I get it. Jerry Jones was right in one front. Now, I was very happy with the outcome of the game. I don't care how we got there. I don't care that 35 million people were watching. I care that the Raiders won the game. But Jerry Jones was right. Okay, you have 34.8 million. Is it bad when you have a game? Now, again, dramatic. You had wild plays. You had three different tries. The game-winning field goal, I think it was actually almost four because dude kept jumping off sides. But it's, I ask, is there anything that can slow it down? But is a game like that, Rich, is it good for the NFL?
A game like that, well, certainly it's good for the NFL.
Because the Cowboys are playing, right?
Yeah, of course. The Cowboys are involved and they're quote-unquote America's team. I guess the only point that Jerry Jones was making is how the game was decided. You know, this idea that the amount of defensive pass interference calls that were flagged, you know, he called it throw up ball because he didn't like how it was being officiated. The 14 penalties for 110 yards against the Raiders, the 14 penalties for 166 yards against the Cowboys. It's ugly, but at the same token, it's doing business the way business is being done, and that's a poor job by both defensive coordinators, by both teams' defenses overall, not adjusting their playing style to how the game was being officiated. It was no secret. They were going to call tight on the PI. And you saw that in the first half. It was consistent in the second half. The only times I really have a problem with officiating is when it's bizarrely over-officiated, which I wouldn't say this game was, or it's inconsistent. And so I don't have a huge problem with it. I understand maybe the complaints in overtime. You want to allow certain things to fly because you're into, you know, extra time and you'd rather the players decide the game rather than the officials. But I think it just sounded like belly aching after the game, frankly, from Jerry Jones.
I was here for it. I was I'm very happy with the way things went. Speaking of Power Five, and you know, I've got to kick off hour number four. I mean, DeSager is going to go all in coming up next with us. But to kick off hour number four, I've got all these highlights that we're going to share from the games today, including a game in Nebraska today that it makes no sense, and it kind of even adds to a season that's made no sense for the Nebraska Cornhuskers. With Rich Ortenberger, I'm Chris Plankin for Jason and Mike on Fox Sports Radio. We're college football guys. So this college football note is crazy. Nebraska, the Cornhuskers, the mighty Cornhuskers, they become the first team in college football history to lose 9 games by single-digit margins in the same season.
Wow.
They went 1-8 in the Big Ten, and their combined scoring margin in those games was 0. They lost 8 games by a combined 49 points, and then they beat Northwestern by 49 points. So zero. It made their scoring margin 0.0, essentially.
You know, I don't want to make a sweeping judgment here. I don't want to overgeneralize here.
Go ahead.
But by and large, when you see a team that consistently loses close games, it is coaching. It is a failure to communicate and emphasize the importance of situational football, doing the right things at the right time when they matter the most. And Scott Frost, I mean, look, there's a case to be made against this guy as the future head coach of this program. I just, that's a tough hill to climb. That's a tough pill to swallow if you're the athletic director. If you're a player on that team and you're understanding, like, well, we're doing everything right, or we're trying our hardest, it just falls apart at the end and you blame yourself. Well, from the outside perspective, no, I mean, like, yes, the players got to go and win football games, but they also have to be, they have to have that awareness of situational football. And in the NFL, there's a lot more, I guess the leashes are a lot shorter on coaches who don't get that right. And they get gone a lot faster than at the college ranks, but there's only so much more of that Husker fans are going to tolerate.
He's getting another year. I hope it's not a year like Clay Helton had, right? Because if you're going to fire a guy after 2 games, why the hell did you bring him back to begin with? But wild note for Nebraska this year. And Husker fans, you remain just the best. They sold that place out today. It was packed, even for a 3-8 football team that finishes the year 3-9.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.
Hey, this is Jason McIntyre. Join me every weekday morning on my podcast, Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre. This isn't your typical sports pod pushing the same tired narratives down your throat every day. Straight Fire gives you honest opinions on all the biggest sports headlines, accurate stats to help you win big at the sports book, and all the best guests. Do yourself a favor and listen to Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We are saving you from nonstop Starling Marte talk tonight. Because if Jason was in...
That's very true.
That's what you'd be getting. But we're pumped, man, with Rich on Plank. Iowa Sam running the show. Nick B, which, by the way, I don't know if you knew this or not, Rich. Nick, you don't mind me saying this, right?
Yeah, we're down to an hour here.
Yeah, it's good. You guys can talk about it.
We're down to an hour, and this is Nick's last night.
Yeah.
This is his last show on Fox Sports Radio.
He is going on a vision quest. He said that he's going
really
off the coast of St. Bart's, and he's going to do a lot of peyote.
Do you know there's edible shrooms now? Have you? Yeah. Well, shrooms have always been edible, but like the candy shrooms, you going to try those out to help you out
I
there
have not,
or no?
I have not, but as Rich said, I'm going to go out to the desert and befriend the coyote.
That's right. That's right.
I dig Nick, man. I'm going to miss you, buddy, but I'm happy for you, man. This is a good thing. Nick, by the way, underrated good sports mind that we probably don't take advantage of enough, but we'll miss you, man. Cool stuff. We'll get your top 50 favorite moments of being on Fox Sports Radio coming up for our final 30 minutes so Rich and I don't have to do any heavy lifting, all right?
Can't wait.
Yeah, we're gonna lean on you big time.
We've talked for 3.5 hours. We're kicking our feet up in your top 50 moments.
I'm gonna nap, and Plank is going to occasionally just go, ooh, yeah, I remember
that. Yeah, that's good.
I see how it is. Give the warm man all the heavy lifting doing the final hour. I see how it is.
No, exactly. Which, by the way, I got to tell this one quick story. Do you know, Nick, how long it took me to figure out that your Twitter handle was what? Merc with one arm?
How long?
Like till last week was one of those things where it's like, wait, is that Nick?
You find this man.
Exactly. I had no idea. So well done. And then I realized, damn, he's just a gamer like I am. We sit around, play video games, and take selfies. So let's go. Are you juiced about the college schedule tomorrow? Because I know, I'm over the top where, like, I'm ready to... I'm not going to sleep tonight, I don't think. Tomorrow, I'm just telling you right now. When I get done here, I'm going to have hot tea to fix the voice, make sure we're good, which is going to be fine. Vocal cords are muscle. We're good. But we got Bedlam tomorrow night, and Bedlam is OU-OSU. It might be the last Bedlam ever, and we say that, but they'll play again at some point. They'll play in other sports.
Yeah.
Right. But it's everything's on the line for both of these teams, right? Oklahoma State is the number two defense in the country this year. You heard that right. A Big 12 defense is number two in the country. And don't look now, but the defenses at Baylor and Iowa State are pretty damn good too. Oh, and so is Oklahoma's. And we were talking to Pete Futek about it earlier. That path is there for both of these teams. So I'm fired up about it. You've got what some people debate is the greatest rivalry in all of sports, Ohio State and Michigan. It's so heated, it's so hated that – Ohio State just refers to them as the team from up north, right? So I just, with those two massive rivalries, I know the Iron Bowl isn't what it once was, Alabama-Auburn. I think Penn State and Michigan State is a big deal tomorrow. A&M and LSU is not, it doesn't have the stakes that it did, but when you consider how LSU did everything they could to try to pry Jimbo Fisher away from Texas A&M, is this the year that South Carolina can get Clemson? I know there's not always these great kind of stakes outside of, say, Oklahoma and Oklahoma State and Ohio State and Michigan, but damn, I'm juiced about this slate from top to bottom from college football tomorrow.
No, I completely agree with you. I really, really do. And, you know, selfishly, it couldn't happen at a better moment. I have the Saturday off.
You're
after
off.
Being on the call today for my college football assignment. So I get to sit back, relax. Well, relax is probably overstating it. I got a 3-year-old and a 6-year-old, but I'm going to try to sit and watch as much as I possibly can. And it's movement week. I mean, we could see rankings change considerably. We could see conference championship berths change considerably. This is a fun week of college football. And as you mentioned, that OK State-Oklahoma rivalry is one of those, like the Ohio State-Michigan, you know, in conference rivalries that matter. You know, the Alabama-Auburn, you know, I don't want to over-exaggerate how meaningful those rivalries are, but they are. You know, people get into them, and they set family reunions around them, and they expect it year after year after year. It's a, you know, it's one of those I don't know what to, you know, sort of milestones yearly for certain people, and as we have this amorphic sort of
Ooh, I like that.
Realignment of college football happening where you don't know where everything's going to land. These rivalries are going to be, in some ways, going away. You know, I mean, is it important to you that regardless of how things shake out, that history is considered when realignment occurs?
I wish history. I wish history and regionality were more taken into account, because you kind of look at regionality, you're like, okay, Maryland's in the Big Ten now, right? Yeah, or yeah. West Virginia's in the Big 12. But again, that's all about TV markets during a different time of realignment. But yeah, I hope it is. You know, I really do. The teams in the Big 12, just if I can look at this from a selfish perspective, they're really, really mad about how this went down, and they still are. And Saturday night's going to be very hostile, or tonight, if you will, for Oklahoma heading there. But I'll tell you what, Rich, I still want to do it every year. I still want to be able to play Oklahoma State in football, and I still want to be able to go to Stillwater and play them every other year, right? I don't know if it's going to happen. The business of it is hard with future schedules, but yeah, come on. Oklahoma, Nebraska playing this year, even though, as you know, we brought up, it's been a tough year for Nebraska. That was awesome. I mean, it really was, because when I wasn't a massive college football fan when I was a wee lil one, but I mean, that's what so many people grew up on. That I hope it is, as we continue to go through like the latest round of what the future of college football is going to look like.
Yeah, I think the fans, unfortunately, in a lot of this talk are. And I'm talking about the local fans. I'm talking about, you know, the school fans. I'm not talking about the national viewing audience, because you're going to have a passive view. I'm part of that viewing audience. I love college football. I mean, I obviously root harder for my alma mater. I root harder for teams that I know players on, or I've had an opportunity to watch a lot of their games, whether it be in market or otherwise. But I love football, so right. I'm here for it all. And I think there's a lot of people who passively watch football that way. They can get into any game if it's a game of importance. But for the local fan, for the Sooner fan that grew up with those Nebraska games, the fact that that goes away because of conference realignment, that stings. You know what I mean? The fact that Oklahoma and OK State, that rivalry could go away, could become less than an annual meeting. That stings. You know, I hope that's taken into consideration, although I really don't think it will be, because at the end of the day, we know this sport. It comes down to the almighty dollar bill.
Now, since we're on the cusp of it, and because it's become a talking point, we did hear from Mike Gundy about the future of Bedlam earlier this week, and here's what the Oklahoma State coach had to say about how he feels about the future of this, I guess you could say, one-sided. I mean, it's a very one-sided rivalry. Oklahoma has dominated in this rivalry, but it's also still fun and it's very competitive.
I don't think it will. I just don't think there's a business side of it that will. I don't make that decision. I guess Dr. Schrum and Chad Weiberg, they could do whatever they wanted, or the board. I don't know who's involved in this. I don't think it's a realistic thing that it's going to happen based on the business side of Power 5 conference football in the Big 12 or the SEC. That's just my opinion on it. I mean, I could be wrong, and I'm not getting that from anybody. I'm just answering a question you asked me.
By the way, I love the fact that Mike Gundy has been the head coach at Oklahoma State since 2005, and he still acts like he does not understand the scheduling process of college football. It's like, you know, I don't know who makes that decision. But, you know, he's right. So that adds a layer to this on Saturday night between Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, because there is this possibility, right, if this Oklahoma-Texas move happens sooner rather than later, that this could be, if not for certain, the last Bedlam in Stillwater, but maybe the last OU-OSU game for a long time. I've got notes on this game I want to share coming up in just a bit. But I didn't want to get out of this first segment, Rich, without immediately shifting our focus to the Big House, where Michigan hosts Ohio State.
Sure.
And, you know, I keep going back to Pete Futek's conversation that we had. I love the point that he brought up about a team being able to run the football and Ohio State not really having been challenged. Kenneth Walker III, we all agree, could. But by the time, you know, Michigan State finally got its feet under him, they were down 21-0 in the game, and they couldn't really commit to the run. Are we giving? Is there anything that you see in Michigan where you say, I think this could be the year where they turn it around? Because they do have some dudes now. They got a guy that might go second or third in the NFL draft. But can they overcome history here in C.J. Stroud?
No. No, I don't think so. I really don't. Look, C.J., it's like kind of like bringing a knife to a gunfight, unfortunately.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah, you could talk to me about Michigan's run game. I'm happy for him. You know, I love that. You're able to control the clock and lean on teams who have inferior passing attacks. And Michigan's got a good defense. I'm not going to say they don't. But, I mean, look, Ohio State has just been rolling folks lately.
Right.
I don't have the numbers in front of me. Their last two games, they've won by a margin. Let me see. Yeah. Okay. So last two games.
It's funny.
113-38 is what they've outscored their opponents. And that includes a ranked Michigan State team who had just paid their coach some part of $100 million.
That's right.
I mean, look, Ohio State is on God mode right now, and they're rolling into a rivalry matchup. I mean, I'm taking Ohio State, and I'll lay all those points if I'm a betting man, because I don't know if there's a line I wouldn't bet Ohio State on. I just think they're going to roll. I don't see it any other way. However, look, again, rivalry games, they're interesting because emotions run high, mistakes can be made, players may get wrapped up into the storylines, and that's why the line, I think it was still under 10 they were favored by last I looked. Is that accurate?
Scoresandodds.com, I just updated it, and it is 7.
Down
open
to 7.
At 7.5. Got bet up to 8. Now it's back down to 7.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of action coming in on Michigan. Look, again, rivalry week. You're never going to – well, I shouldn't say never. That would be overstating it. This is a ranked Michigan team, and they've done some nice work in the Big Ten, no question about it. But rivalry week, it's difficult to give a double-digit point advantage to either side, you know, whoever would be the overwhelming favorite. But yeah, I don't give Michigan much of a chance here. I could be wrong, but I just don't.
I will say it's amazing to think about just the spell that Ryan Day, and then even going back, Ohio State seems to have over Michigan and Jim Harbaugh right now. I mean, it's just there's one game that you look back that was pretty close. What it was like a fourth down spot that
Ohio State
got right. Remember that?
Yep.
But that's really about it. Every other game you look at, you're like, oof, I think they've given up 120
Harbaugh,
points in the last 2 years.
You remember he was furious post game. Again, great rivalry. And I'll tell you what, Jim Harbaugh, outside of, you know, this game and some bowl games, I think he's done an excellent job with the Wolverine football program. There's no doubt.
Absolutely.
But yeah, this year just doesn't feel like it's the year. I'll stand proven wrong and stand corrected if the Michigan defense can hold and that rushing attack can play keep away, because that'll make for a better game than I'm envisioning.
Same, absolutely. These last two games they've played have been very forgettable. Last year in Columbus, 62-39. What, 2019? Because they didn't play in 2020,
right? That's
right.
Yeah, they did not.
Because of COVID. 56-27 in 2019. So we'll see if Michigan can right the ship this year against Ohio State. It's one of the biggest games in college football. The winner moves on to the Big Ten championship game and a likely spot in the four-team playoff. The loser, whatever the second bowl is in the Big Ten, that's crazy to think about. But if Ohio State loses, how great these last two games have been, they're going to be on the outside looking in of the college football playoff. Same for Michigan.